This is kind of a coincidence that I'm have a lesson out of Ecclesiastes because we're doing our readings there, but hopefully that will help us to be fresher in memory of some of the things I'm going to say this morning. I'm not going to be able to give the book of Ecclesiastes the time that I would like to, so I'm just going to say a few things that have come to my mind concerning what Ecclesiastes teaches, what the book is about, some gleanings from it as time allows. You could take a lot of different little lessons from this book. It is a book of wisdom. It is the book that the writer has given to us to help us to understand our reason for living, our purpose in life. What is your purpose in life? Well, Solomon answers this in this wonderful book of wisdom, and I just want to notice by reading chapter 1, verse 3, found on page 763. He says there, "What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun?" This is one of the key verses that helps us to understand the perspective of the writer, of Solomon, the king, who had asked for wisdom, and we're going to notice how he came about the wisdom that he has, where he got it, what kind of wisdom it was compared to other kinds of wisdom. And one of the conclusions he reaches very early is in the form of a question, very profound. What profit? What's the reason? What is the value that a person gains from all of their work in life, their labor? Because each of us, all of us, have to somehow sustain our living. And so we all have to work in some form. Some may be more mental, some may be more physical. But the question he asks is, this work that we do it under the sun. He's talking about here, very specifically, as the Bible gives perspective. There will be a perspective that goes back and forth from physical or material to spiritual, and sometimes that may confuse the reader. So the perspective here is the work that all men and women do in their life, their whole life. What does it mean? What's the meaning of it? The purpose of it under the sun, the physical purpose of your life. And the reason he puts it this way, of course, is to read some more verses. So I'd like to begin at the beginning here in verse 1 of chapter 1 and read a little bit. I'm not going to read any more other than this, and I'll just refer to some verses later on. But notice what he says in verse 1, chapter 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Well, he gives us his identity. This is Solomon. He is the son of David. He was the king of Jerusalem. And the words of the preacher sets the tone of the book itself. The word Ecclesiastes, of course, is Hebrew. And it comes from the word Q-O-H-E-L-E-T-H, the Hebrew word Koheleth, which means preacher. And he's preaching to the assembly. He's preaching to God's people, and that's the meaning of the book. And when it sounds a little familiar, Ecclesiastes sounds like ecclesia. That comes from our Latin and English word for assembly. And so the preacher here is speaking to God's people. He's speaking to the assembly of Israel. And so this book is a book for us because it is God speaking through Solomon about spiritual wisdom. And the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, says in verse 2, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher. It seems like a very negative tone that he begins with, and a lot of people take it this way. It seems somewhat dark. Vanity of vanities. You know, vanity means meaningless, uselessness, worthlessness. It's nothing. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Verse 2, he starts out, it seems, as a very negative tone. But really it's not. It's a perspective of his wisdom showing us that of all of man's knowledge and wisdom and toil and work and labor, he's showing us right off the bat that it is worthless in a certain sense. And that's when he asked the question, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun, his physical life? One generation passes away, verse 4, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full, to the place from which the rivers come. There they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. That physical perspective that he has. Verse 10, is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. And listen to verse 13. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great knowledge, great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief. And he who increases in knowledge increases in sorrow. Now I'm going to stop there. There's a lot of thoughts there, a lot of profound thoughts. By the wisdom that God had given him, he's giving us a perspective of life, our purpose of life. And that question was asked in verse 3, what profit has a man or a woman from all their labor in which they toil under the sun? What value or purpose is there to this life? What's the meaning of life? Why is life worth living? You know, some people check out early. To them, life is not worth living. The problems that they have will come to each and every one of us. How are we going to deal with those problems? At some point, melancholy hits people as they get older. The randomness of life, that some things don't seem to fit, some things don't tie together, ends stay loose. You know, one thing that I think all of us, I could be wrong, if you're like me and you like to be in control of your life, of things that you can control. The book of Ecclesiastes tells us that you can't control life. Life has some things that are set in order by God himself. And this book is about God. This book is a book that teaches us that God is actually in control of things, even though you don't understand it, and you can't understand it, and you need to be satisfied that you cannot know everything. The wisest man in the world, Solomon, was given wisdom by God to understand what a human could understand. And you know what he said? It's all meaningless. It's worthless. It's vanity. It's uselessness under the sun in a physical sense. But later on, he comes to an interesting conclusion. I'm going to jump ahead and give you this so you'll see it's not a negative book. In chapter 12, verse 1, he says, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and your years draw near, when you say, I have no pleasure in them. When the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened and the clouds do not return after the rain, and the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men bow down and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows grow dim, and the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low. When one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of music are brought low. Also they are afraid of height and the terrors in the way, when the almond tree blossoms. The grasshopper is a burden and desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Verse 6, remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought and set out, and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads, and the words of scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of making many books there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. The conclusion, of course, is that without God, yes, life is meaningless. And that's the perspective you have throughout Ecclesiastes quite a bit that sounds very negative. Under the sun, vanity of vanities, the labor, the work that you do, the knowledge that you have, man's own wisdom will lead to sorrow. Did you know that the wiser you get, the more that you know, the less happy and satisfied you will be in this life without God? Now, if you have God, then your perspective is perfect. You have the right perspective according to Ecclesiastes. Because if you serve God in this life, you will find satisfaction. You will find how to be content. You will learn it because this life, you know, is temporary. It's limited. It has its failures. It has its faults. And people around us are not perfect. And he even says in there, and I'm not going to quote it, but I'll paraphrase. When you look at someone else and you judge them harshly, look at yourself. Don't you make those same mistakes? And so when you judge somebody, remember yourself. And when you hear people talk about you, don't take those words to heart, because everyone says them. Everyone at some point is going to say something negative about you, or you're going to say something negative about them. So when you set up some kind of judgment, it really shouldn't bother you, because you're really the same. Everybody's the same, except Jesus Christ. We have a Savior who's a little bit different, who is able to obey God. And in the end, that's the purpose of life, is that Son, to be under that Son, S-O-N. But under this Son, S-U-N, what we're talking about this morning, is earth has its limitations. And that's what the book of Ecclesiastes is about. The perspective of it is the words of this great teacher. And he tells us that life here without God is utterly meaningless. Everything. Those who you see prosper, kings, the rich, the smart, the wise, that are earthly, without God, it is nothing. It comes to nothing. It will be nothing. The reason is, Ecclesiastes tells us that God puts eternity in our hearts. And if we don't seek after God, if we don't fulfill that eternity that's within our hearts with God's truth, then we will have empty lives. Religion is not the answer. You know, a lot of people around us seek religion. They look for some kind of meaning in religion. They look for worship of things, idols, idolatry, statues, necklaces, things, something they can get a hold of, something that they can look at. But God doesn't ask for that. He asks for sincerity and seriousness, according to Ecclesiastes. He wants you at some point in your life to think seriously. And I'm going to get to some of these in just a moment. But did you know that Ecclesiastes says that funerals are better than parties? That seems odd. Funerals are actually better for you than parties, because Solomon, out of all his wisdom, partied. He was a king. He could order everything that he wanted, and he says he even tried drinking wine to see how things were fun with wine, even though he limited himself, he says, using his wisdom, he didn't go too far, to see what the end result was. And he said, even that's vanity. Yes, it's pleasurable. It's fun for a time. That's why the world loves it, and it generates billions of dollars for people to party, and parties with alcohol is what a lot of people go after. And that's why he writes at the end of this, as an old man, Solomon writes to the youth. Remember your Creator. in the days of your youth, because there is where you can stop regrets. When you're young and you serve God when you're young, as you grow older, you have less regrets. But if you wait, you may not make it. The regrets may overcome you. You may not be able to overcome the regrets. And so there are many wonderful things he says here, but I'll quickly hasten on as he's answering this question. What value or purpose is there for living? What is the meaning of life? Well, there's many messages. I'll just notice a couple of main ones. Well, he says, all is vanity, chapter 1, verse 2. Vanity is used 35 times in 29 verses. So it must be very important that he wants us to understand that in this life, without God, because we already know the conclusion, everything is vain, vanity, useless, worthless. If you follow after it, it's like trying to capture the wind, trying to grab the wind, trying to chase after the wind. You can't do it. It is impossible because you're chasing something that you cannot possess. And that's what men and women do. All is vanity, futility. The key phrase is under the sun, which is used in 29 verses. So with this earthly perspective, without God, yes, life is vanity. And the importance of serving God is throughout our life, chapter 12, verse 13. And throughout the book, he describes this as goads and nails. It's very sharp teaching, but it is very solid. It is the right teaching. It is the truth in chapter 12, verse 11. And it prods our thinking. And as I mentioned, why are funerals better than parties? Well, if you go to party after party, and you've probably been to some kind of parties, hopefully you haven't been to the parties that get too out of extreme, but parties are fun for a while. Mirth, he says, is fun, but it's folly. It really doesn't mean anything. It's just you entertaining yourself. It's about you, little social order of friends. What does it teach you? Solomon says for eternity, it doesn't teach you anything. It's for here. It's for under the sun. And it's not dismissing that you have fun. Don't get me wrong. Ecclesiastes is not against fun. Matter of fact, Solomon comes to the conclusion midway that the thing to do when you're working and when you're laboring is to be able to enjoy your labor, to eat, drink, and be merry, as that moniker Dairy Queen has taken, maybe from the Bible. I don't know. I haven't looked that up. But they have that moniker, eat, drink, and be merry. That is from the Bible. Solomon says, learn how to eat, drink, and be happy and content with your life under God. Most people, though, are extreme. They hoard. They're selfish. They want it for themselves. They die extremely wealthy, and it goes where? To the state, to the government, someone who didn't expect it, didn't deserve it, wasn't meant to get it because they didn't have a will. Solomon even says that's stupid. He says that is, if someone gets your inheritance that you worked hard for, someone else gets it and you didn't enjoy it in life, that was worthless. It doesn't mean anything. You wasted your life in that aspect. So what is it that is our purpose in life that he's addressing here? And since he talks about an earthly perspective, and a lot of people seek happiness, some people seek it through work, they're trying to find the answer. And Solomon gives us the answers here as the one that God gave him, these wonderful gifts. But what is our purpose in life? What is our main reason for living? Do you know what your purpose is? What is it that drives you? What motivates you? You know, one of the most challenging courses at the University of Denver was a business law class in which the professor gave difficult true and false tests. During one of the more exasperating exams, the professor noticed another student flipping a coin. The professor approached him and said, "Son, are you guessing on this test?" he asked. "No, sir," replied the student. "I'm just checking my answers." You know, there's a lot of people who seem to live life that way. They don't have any direction, purpose, or goals, and so they live their lives by just flipping a coin, drifting along aimlessly in life, hoping some of the myths that they hear and some of the fallacies, that maybe those are true, and they chase after those. And Solomon talks about chasing after the wind, trying to grasp it. You can't. If it's not the truth, it's not real. And he's telling us what is real. Yogi Berra said, if you don't know where you're going, you'll likely end up someplace else. Now, that may not be quite profound, but it has some profoundness to it. If you don't know where you're going, yes, you will end up someplace you maybe didn't expect to or want to because you don't know where you're going. You know, there was a poll taken on what's life's purpose, somewhat religious poll, and they asked the question, what's your purpose of life? What is your purpose of life? And some of the responses were, one person answered, I can't say I know the purpose. I think after I die, I'll find out what the purpose of life is. Another one said, my purpose, I think my purpose is, I don't know. Some people did have an idea of their purpose in life, and their answers indicated their purpose in life centered around themselves. To have fun, to be happy, to have a good time, enjoy my life, to have as much fun as possible and in as short time as possible. And Ecclesiastes addresses that. There is nothing wrong with enjoying life, but you must enjoy it with God or it's vain. It's worthless. It will not mean anything. Ecclesiastes is not promoting atheism or agnosticism. It is promoting a true faith in God, because the kind of faith Ecclesiastes talks about is one that's sincere and serious. So there's nothing wrong with enjoying life, but that if that's your whole purpose in life, Solomon says it's empty. There's an emptiness to it. It's like cotton candy. It's all taste and no substance. You know, as I look around Texas, there seems to be more and more people since I moved here in 06. The population is growing, and I tend to notice it, especially in traffic. And I see a lot of nice automobiles out there because I have time to do nothing but look at automobiles when they're sitting in front of me. And there's very nice ones, and I think, boy, that must cost a lot of money. I see some very expensive ones. It would be nice to have that. Sometimes I think about that, and I think, yeah, but I wouldn't want to. I'd have to work so long to pay for it. And the payments and the insurance and people scratching it up, and I start thinking about it, and I think, I really don't want it. At first, I thought I might want it. But I know that those people that do have them, they have them a lot of times, they think they can afford it. Maybe they can. Some people can't. But I think of all these pockets that are filled around me with money, there's a lot of empty souls. There are a lot of rich people around, a lot of wealthy people in America, but a lot of souls that have no meaning. They have no place or purpose in life. So there's nothing wrong with enjoying life, and Solomon tells us that. Eat, drink, and be merry, he says, but do it with content. Learn how to be content. You know, it's not wrong necessarily to want better things, good things, but not to the extent that you're trading or putting God second, putting other things more important behind. You know, other people in this poll had some pretty good answers. Some of these were even some that Christians might give. Some said, the purpose for me to live, my purpose in life, is to have a moral life, to raise a good family, to raise up kids and have a good future. But I would suggest to you that all these purpose statements were not, they were short-sighted. In essence, they're not big enough for a Christian. Ecclesiastes tells us that our purpose should be what God made it to be. He put eternity in our hearts, according to Ecclesiastes. Now think about that. That's why people are chasing things, searching after things. And without the Bible, they don't have the instructions on how to accomplish that. Our goal, of course, is to teach them, to preach to them, to share with what we've learned. It's not a secret, but men do make it a secret. They hide the Bible. They discount it. All kinds of things. And if someone thinks, well, maybe, you know, he came up, he got lucky, he had some wise little snippets of things that he said there. But there's a lot of things in this book that shows that it is a divine book. It has divine inspiration. I just want to notice a couple of those that are worth noting, I think. You know, there's some things in Ecclesiastes that are very profound, spiritual teachings, but there's also some physical ones that were totally unknown to science. The writer here comprehends two scientific principles that were relatively unknown in his day and time. There was no way that he could know these, and yet he wrote about them. The knowledge of these principles, I believe, show the divine authorship of this book, that it is from God. When he talked in chapter 1 and verse 6, he said something there that we might skip if we don't kind of notice these words. He says, the wind goes toward the south and turns to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. That may pass a lot of people up, maybe in that day. In 1940, As high-flying aircraft and special observation balloons provided observations in the upper atmosphere, it was discovered that there is a basic pattern for air circulation. This is caused as the sun warms the ground. The ground heats the air. The sun rays strike obliquely at the poles, causing the ground there to heat air less at the equator. Warm air rises at the equator, causing greater pressure at altitude. Air pressure at the ground level is greater at the poles because it's colder and denser. This pressure differential forces the air rising at the equator to flow north at high altitude until it cools and drops down at the pole, at which time it flows southward to fill the space at the equator being emptied by the rising air there. That was unknown. Science just discovered that. How would Ecclesiastes, a man who says, I've got the wisdom from God, write that unless he did? But that's only one aspect. What about the water vapor cycle? And I'll be through with this one. In verse 7, all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there will they return again. Well, in 1520, until it was known that the earth was spherical, the common belief was the rivers flowing into the oceans did not cause the ocean to rise because an equal amount of water was spilling off the ends of the earth. Before Magellan's discovery, no scientist conceived the idea that there was water in the ocean that was being cycled to provide fresh water of the rivers until 1520. This was way earlier than that. Is that God's writing through Solomon? Or was Solomon lucky? He just was a smart guy and he just came up with this stuff. In 1770, it wasn't observed until the 18th century that clouds can transport moisture away from the air in which they are formed. From observations at only a few points, Benjamin Franklin was the first to recognize that individual storms move from place to place over the Earth's surface. The river to sea to river water cycle was published by Benjamin Franklin from his observations, thus greatly aiding the study of weather by men. This is all from Has God Spoken by A.O. Schnabel, page 39 through 44. There's many observations in this book that shows it is an amazing book. It is a book of wisdom. And God was impressed with Solomon because he gave him a choice of a gift. And you know what it was he chose was wisdom. And even though he only chose that thing and not wealth or prestige as a king, popularity, God said, I'm going to give you those too because I'm pleased that you chose wisdom. God is pleased with us too when we choose wisdom. When we choose to know God, to seek after God, you know, the Bible teaches us that without faith, it's impossible to please God. Not just any faith, obviously not blind faith that people accuse us of. The right kind of faith. Faith is a substance of things hoped for. Substance. The evidence of things not seen. Evidence. Substance and evidence holds up in courts, civil court. Well, in God's court, if you have the substance and the evidence of your faith in Jesus Christ, that's going to hold up. He's the judge. He says, that's what I'll take. That kind of faith. I won't take any other. Without faith, it's impossible to please him. And so Ecclesiastes, and this is kind of random talking here, but there's just so much I'd like to say about it. I simply don't have time, but the prophet is, of all of our work and all of our labor, it's all meaningless. People who, what do they gain from all the things they do under the sun? Well, Solomon says, you know, that question was a question that he had, just like everybody else has. In Ecclesiastes 1 and 3, in chapter 8 and verse 9. And so he says, he set about to apply his heart, to seek, to search by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. And he said, without God, there is nothing, nothing worthwhile. It's a waste of your time. And that's why the book of Ecclesiastes says there's a time for this and that, a season, time and seasons. That's Earth's clock, biological clock. That's man's biological clock. About everything is going to happen to you that happens to everybody else. Maybe not the full extent. There's going to be sorrow. There's going to be pain. There's going to be suffering. These water cycles of rain, it's going to rain on the just and the unjust. People are going to die. It's not fair that they die. Babies will die. People will die in wars. Brothers will fight brothers in civil wars. Families will lose family members through death. Children will die. Stillborn. He even makes a statement about stillborn children. It's better that they didn't live under the sun in a physical aspect because life is full of so much sorrow. They're going to go through it just like everybody else. It doesn't matter how rich you are, how smart you are, even how wise he was. He says, on earth, it's very limited, because everything is going to befall you. You're going to be forgotten. Your memory will only last as long as those who knew you are around. Once they're gone, what's left? How do you retain a memory? Well, the gospel can do it. The gospel is words from God. And if you share those words, you can put the memory of God in people's hearts. And God tells us that he put eternity in our hearts. And the way that we put it in other people's hearts or fulfill that void of them seeking after eternity, even though they don't know what they're searching for, is to put God there. And the gospel can do that. We're all going to suffer oppressions. Ecclesiastes talks about that. It talks about every person on this earth. Even though some men and women's lives are long, some are short, we're all going to die. We all labor for sustenance, Ecclesiastes 2:11. The experiences of heartache, sorrow, pain, and sickness in Ecclesiastes 5:17. And some other verses, we're all going to suffer oppressions, Ecclesiastes 4:1. People seek out wisdom, that's good, Ecclesiastes 1:13, we should also, but the right wisdom. Everyone seeks pleasure, Ecclesiastes 2:1, happiness, Ecclesiastes 2:3. All these occur in one's life, but Solomon wants to answer why. What profit can come from these things? What hath a man of all his labor and the striving of his heart from wherein he labors under the sun? 2:22, 3:9. You know, he concludes the endeavor of all this, of attempting to understand why things happen itself, is a vain exercise, because here's why. No man can know and understand God's providential laws. One of the amazing things Ecclesiastes teaches is we need to learn to be content that there are some things we cannot know. You know, one of the strange, I like to look at scientific shows, documentaries, things on what science knows about things, what they say about evolution, what their latest discoveries are. You know, there's a lot of money being spent, if you read the news, billions of dollars on people in science and scientists trying to find alien life in other worlds. Why? Because they feel that this world may not last long. We need better technologies to get us out of here and maybe sustain our life longer if we're going to have to stay here. They need alien knowledge because they know we're limited. And man is very smart, and he's spending all this money to go farther and farther out, sending robots and other types of machines to other planets, because astronauts simply don't have the time to be able to get there, and they may not come back, and they don't want to lose life, to find out answers. And I find some of these things that they say are strange. With all the knowledge and wisdom, it's folly, just like Ecclesiastes says. With all the knowledge that we have, the more that we know about the universe, the less we know. I listened to one fellow the other day, very smart. He's on TV all the time. And they ask him, where's the end of the universe? He said, there is no end because it's expanding. Where's the edge of the earth? Well, you're standing on it. Wherever you stand on the earth, because it's spherical, that's the edge of the earth. Think about that. It kind of makes sense. Because if you step off the earth, you can only go up. You're stepping linear on a spear. You're only going forward or backward, sideways. So the edge of the earth is where you stand. The edge of the universe, he says, we don't know. They said, well, how much of the universe do we know about? He said, about 4%. The rest, we really don't know because we don't understand it. Gravity, that thing really gets them. They don't understand gravity. Ecclesiastes tells us there are some things that we just can't know here. Our wisdom is limited. Even Solomon, with all his godly wisdom, said, learn that God is in control. We're not talking about foreordination of things that what you had for breakfast, that God controlled that. You had a choice. You have free will whether to obey God in the gospel or not. But God is in control of some elements that we cannot change. There are some things that we cannot change that are in his providence. Ecclesiastes tells us, if you learn to be content, that you understand that God is in control and you trust him and you believe his wisdom is the best, your life will be a lot better. If you seek after trying to be selfish, trying to say, I can learn more than God, go back to the Garden of Eden, and I'm going to close with this. Remember in the Garden of Eden? What was that lie they were told? You'll be like gods, knowing good and evil. You can know more than God. Isn't that what people are saying? You know, I don't really trust this God you're telling me about. So I think I can be better than that with technology or whatever. Ecclesiastes already tells us you can't do it. It's impossible. It's vanity to seek after. You're grasping after wind when you think you're going to be wiser than God, because God has put eternity in your hearts. If not, why are people pushing their lives so hard every day in life, in toil? What are they after? What is driving them? Is it survival of the fittest, like evolution says? Or back in the Garden of Eden, what is there? You know, that was a garden. Why does the Bible talk about Eden as being a garden? Well, earth is a garden, whether it's soil or water. We harvest it for life and sustenance. Because in this life, in this body, this is all you got right here. It's a testing ground. Earth is a proving ground for you to prove to God and to yourself what you're made of. God has given each of us a gift of life. Solomon says, learn to enjoy it. When you work, enjoy your labor. Enjoy what you can do. If you can do more than somebody else, fine. Enjoy that. If you're rich, fine. Enjoy that. But don't let that be you grasping after wind. In one hand, you've got all your possessions. In your other hand, you're grasping after wind. He said, that's dumb. You know, knowledge, I think, is my definition is to know how things work. But wisdom, as Solomon teaches it, is to know why things work. The reason why we're here, the purpose of life, is to know God. And at the end of that chapter, he talks about some very strange things when he talks about the grinders and those other things there in those last verses. He's talking about the human body, the frailty of it, how it's falling apart. And as you grow older and older, things will change in your perspective. You know, when we like young people because they're enthusiastic and zealous, and we don't want to change that. We like to be around teenagers. They're called screenagers now because they're on iPhones all the time. But teenagers, you know, when we're young, they have life full of zeal. They don't know that there's going to be bills and contracts and people are going to want to be in your pocket all the time. Life is so fun and exuberant, and we like that. And we were that way once. We remember that. Solomon says you can be that way again. You don't have to change. Yes, your body will fail. It's going to fall apart. But eternity's in your heart. Eternity, you're not going to die just here and be stuck. Your body will. You'll go down just like the dog. And he makes that observation that men without God will die just like a dog. Their soul kind of comes to a cease. It stops going anywhere because it's going to wait for judgment. But if you're ready for judgment, you're ready to start eternity. That's what Ecclesiastes is about, the purpose of life. The wisdom is there. Knowledge about things, very limited. But he teaches that too. Well, I've spoken long enough. There's a lot more things I'd like to say, so I'm going to have to give this lesson in parts. But it is a very good lesson. We could focus on some things that I think are very helpful and useful this morning, hopefully. I've answered some questions about this book, that it is a spiritual book. It is about God's wisdom given to man that tells us this life is to be enjoyable. He created you in his image to enjoy life. But to not forget him, but to put him in everything. To think about your eternity. Think about where you're going. Because you are going to meet your Creator. Are you ready?